Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live, this Tuesday edition here at 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm as well. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Well, the holiday season, I guess, is over, but the violence at the malls isn't. Yesterday saw more trouble. We got details on that. And also, there's a new law that's been passed. You might be surprised as to what it is. We'll talk about that and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. If you'd like to send us an email, please do that. Comments at kpcg.fm. We always appreciate those. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon is here today as well. Grant, you were telling me you had some nightmares last night about the radio station. Do tell.
Yeah, two different ones. The first one, I came here 15 minutes late, so that was bad enough. But then the second one, halfway through the show, you just got up and walked out during one of the commercial breaks.
I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. And then I was trying to flip the knobs to get my voice picked up on the microphone after that, but the rest of the time, there was no sound on the show because I couldn't figure out how to work that soundboard.
Those are the worst dreams, those anxiety dreams. I have them where I'm trying to tie my shoes to get into a basketball game, and I can't tie them. They're like, come on, you know, and I keep trying, and they keep getting more knotted. Weird things like that. I think people have had pretty commonly, you know, something about school, mm-hmm. or you didn't get a test done or something. So all kinds of weird anxiety dreams. I had weird anxiety dreams about marriage after I got married. Mm. I had a dream that I was marrying somebody else. And it seemed weird to me. You know, I'd be up there with somebody else, but then my actual wife was in the audience watching, and I'm like, but it seems like I should marry her, though. But it was too late. I had that dream all the time. I don't know what that says.
Oh, that's terrifying. Yeah, those dreams, they just kind of keep you up at night, and usually there's no substantial reason why there would be a fear of any such thing.
My daughter did something really strange. She's 4 years old. 5 years old? Yeah, just turned five. And she, it was early in the morning, just about to get up. It was just before six. And I heard out in the other room, like in the dining room, there's a certain sound when somebody sits on the chair. It kind of rocks a little bit. And I thought I heard that, and I thought, I wonder what that is. And I thought maybe our cat was jumping on the chair or something. So my wife goes out there, and all of a sudden I hear her say, oh, what are you doing here? It's my daughter sitting there. She had a bad dream, and so she was crying. But she didn't want to wake us up, so she just went and sat in the dining room. I'm like, I would be terrified to go sit in the dining room. Even as an adult, it's dark out there. She's just sitting there.
Yeah, that seems a lot less safe than her own bed.
Yeah, go back to the bed. So anyway, she wasn't out there for long, but I thought, well, that was very thoughtful, just to sit there. And
for a five-year-old especially.
Yeah. So anyway, she told us what the dream was, but I couldn't make heads or tails of it. You know, there was a lot of tears and I don't know, something about thunder. I don't remember. Something happened. It's funny. As an adult, you usually don't get scared that much. It's more anxiety type stuff. But as a kid, you get some pretty scary dreams. They stick with you. You can remember them a long time.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely true. There's a few I can remember from many years ago where I look back on them now and it's just so unrealistic. You know, I had one where my sister was being dropped into a snake pit by some villain. It's just like straight out of an animated villain movie.
Yeah.
And totally unrealistic for real life.
Yeah. And that was a bad one. That was a bad dream.
And it was, because you know what had happened was we had an argument the night before.
Oh.
And then after I went to bed, I had a terrible dream. Then I woke up crying. So then I realized maybe I shouldn't be having any hatred toward my siblings.
I'll put you in that snake pit next time. Yeah, it's always interesting. The dreams, the great dreams that we have. Kind of a bad day at the malls yesterday. We were talking about just some of the violence that had occurred before some of the holidays. There was violence now after the holidays. I didn't go to town yesterday. Did you go? Did you go to town?
No.
You were smart. We were both smart. Stay out of there. I think my wife went, but she didn't have any problems.
Boxing day, right?
Boxing day, yeah.
What does that mean exactly? I guess there's discounts probably.
They're putting it back in the box and taking it to the store. I don't know. Hmm. You're boxing people at the store.
That's always what I think of.
They say police eye social media in spate of post-Christmas mall disturbances. They say they're eyeing social media in a series of disturbances that broke out at malls in several states on the day after Christmas. A mall outside Cleveland, Ohio was placed on lockdown after a large group of juveniles caused a disturbance at around 6:30 p.m. Groups of juveniles at the mall, that's always trouble usually, not good. Very rarely do you see a group of juveniles and think, that good's going to come from that. I think they're going to do something good. They say the incident was loosely organized on social media. One juvenile was arrested for disorderly conduct after officers dispersed the crowd and removed them from the Beechwood Place Mall. No major injuries were reported. Several fights broke out Monday night at the Fox Valley Mall in Aurora, a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. Police had to evacuate the premises. And, of course, everybody pulls out their cell phone and they start taking video. And so there's video of these different things. The terrified shoppers went scrambling for the exits. Sounds like a fun day at the mall. When the mall ends, the mall trip ends with you scrambling for the exits. Not a good day at the mall.
That's really true. Yeah, I can't think of anything like that ever happening anywhere near me. I've never seen a fight in public, so it's just kind of so strange to hear that it happens pretty much every day.
Yeah, it's weird. I guess you don't know what you'd do. I suppose in most cases you just get out of there. Don't want to get involved, you know. They say the Aurora, Illinois Police Department said they were called in to assist an unruly crowd in the common area, followed by a fight in the food court and several other smaller altercations. So, and there were a few other situations as well. So when you've got to evacuate the mall, the police have to come. It's just bad press for the mall. Stores lose money. I mean, it affects a lot of people.
And that just shows you that those people don't have the consideration of your 5-year-old daughter, because they're not thinking about anyone else and how they might be trying to enjoy their day. A lot of people even go to the mall just to walk around and get some exercise. So really, it disrupts everybody.
Yeah, you have to be careful if you're going to the mall, especially on very busy days like that. And so the police came and they had to evacuate a few places. And you have to wonder. I mean, I've walked around in the malls before, and there's, especially when it's busy, and you look around and you think, things could happen, because we've seen things like this happen at malls or terror attacks. And you look around, you're like, I don't know what people are doing. You don't want to think about it too much. You get paranoid. But I mean, things could break out. You do have to wonder about it sometimes.
Yeah. And like you were saying, with those packs of juveniles, that can be a little bit unsettling when you see a lot of older teenagers together. I know personally, I was never even allowed to go out in big groups without parental supervision. Maybe if it was with one or two other people, that could have been fine, just because then you don't have all of the fake courage that you get whenever you're in a big group. And then there can be a lot of trouble from that.
Yeah, we were at the mall a couple of weeks ago, and going up the escalator, we had seen a movie and we were leaving. We're going up the escalator, and these two teenagers, guy and a girl, I don't know, they were on a date or something. And they get on the escalator, and we're like halfway up the escalator already. And they run all the way up and stand directly behind us on the, like, step right behind us. And I kind of look back like, yes, you know, nothing. They wanted to do that. So
you didn't get over to the right and allow them to go to the left speed lane?
Yeah, we were like 3 steps from the top. I mean, there was, it was just a little bizarre. But thankfully, there was no intimidation there. They were both very very frail individuals.
Oh.
But but it was just a little like personal space invasion. I'm not sure why they did that, but having fun at the mall, you know how it is. You're lost in love and you're at the shopping mall. You enjoy yourselves. The violent weekend in Chicago again. They've had a very violent year. This is from CBS Local Chicago. 48 shot, 11 fatally in Christmas weekend shootings in Chicago. They never get a break, even on their holidays. It's amazing.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be staying home for once and maybe just enjoying a little bit of time, a little bit of peace off the streets instead of out there engaging in gang warfare like always.
Even in, what was it, World War One? I think it was. Maybe it's World War Two. I think it was World War One. They took a break on Christmas and stopped killing each other, and then went back to it, but they took a break, but not in Chicago. 11 men were killed, and at least 37 other people have been wounded in shootings over the Christmas weekend across Chicago. The gun violence since Friday evening has surpassed the toll over the same four-day holiday last year when 30 people were shot across the city. That place is a war zone. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you could see that maybe there'd be some people who would be really frustrated if maybe a relative was shot, and it's like, really, you're going to do it at this time when supposedly it's the most wonderful time of the year and we should be having Christmas cheer like that, and there's just no break for it. I mean, that's just, it's unbelievable. But the thing is, it seems like usually the anger is directed toward the wrong target, whether it's guns or police. You know, if a relative gets shot dead by a gang member, why aren't you most mad at gangs never stopping that activity?
Yeah, a lot of people get caught in the collateral damage.
Not even meant to be shot at.
Right.
Exactly.
So in this case, they didn't give all the details, but and it would be kind of a tough list to go through anyway. But I think I'm not totally sure, but I think they're over their I think they've set the record this mm-hmm. year. Because I remember we talked about it a week or two ago. They were very close to setting the record for the most fatalities mm-hmm. in a year, and I don't think they were far away. And here you have 11 over the weekend. So I think they're getting close to that number if they haven't passed it already. So, and there was a story the other day, too, about people moving out of Chicago that's come up a couple of times. People are getting out of there if they can, and I think it's because of things like this.
Yeah, it just seems like a rough place to live. Even whenever I visited there, it just seemed like, you know, maybe it's because I've heard so many news stories, but you definitely want to stay in the right parts of the city where there are a lot of bright lights. Stay near the train if you're getting on the train, and don't wander down the wrong alley.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I got lost in, where was it? Philadelphia one time, and that was not fun. Mm. Thankfully, I was in a car, but
yeah,
everyone knew. They knew, like, hey, that guy's not from around here. Like, they all stopped and watched me drive by.
Right.
Sorry, just visiting. Wrong street. Never mind me. I didn't see anything.
It's just odd whenever there are so many intense, intimidating-looking people in one place, because that's how Chicago was. All of them look like they would give you a rough time if they wanted to. It looked pretty tough.
Yeah, you got to stay in the right part of town, which in some cases is just stay out of town.
Right. In the whole town. In Chicago's case, maybe it's not worth going.
Yeah, it used to be where there'd be bad parts of a city, but there were some nicer parts, and that's probably still the case, but really it's starting to spill to everywhere. Mm-hmm. Even in Chicago, like crowds going to the Miracle Mile shopping area and doing flash mobs and things like that, so it spills into some of those areas sometimes. Here's a crazy, crazy story. Hard to believe this is real, but it is. From Reuters. Pennsylvania professor under fire for white genocide tweet. A Drexel University professor who tweeted that he wanted a white genocide for Christmas sparked a firestorm of criticism from the school and social media users. Well, I would think so. He said on Monday his comment was a satire. Well, of course it was. I was just kidding. Just kidding about killing that entire race of people. Just a joke. You know how people like those jokes. Those are really funny, aren't they?
Of course.
Everybody loves those. Get up and you talk about a minority group and killing them all. People love that. Oh, the humor. The person's name, boy, it's a tough one. George Cicerillo Maher. They say he's a white assistant professor of history.
So what he was saying was to kill not the whites, but the whites do the killing?
No, I think he wants to kill the whites.
But he's white, isn't he?
He is, but I don't know what his nationality is. Like, I don't know what his... They say he's a white assistant professor, but his name is Cicerillo Maher. It's a hyphenated name.
And yeah.
He's a professor of history and politics.
So he wants to kill the whites.
History and politics. Yeah, he's a history of I thought it's something. I thought he was like a Latin American professor or something, but I'm not sure what his deal is. But in any event, that's what he tweeted. He tweeted, "All I want for Christmas is white genocide," on Christmas Eve. He followed up on Sunday by tweeting, "To clarify, when the whites were massacred during the Haitian Revolution, that was a good thing indeed." Well, there you go.
Well, he made it clear. Now I know which race he wants to kill.
He made it clear, yeah. And some people are upset, but some people are supporting him. He has drawn online support with a change.org petition backing him, generating almost 3,000 signatures by Monday. And they said this. Now get this. "Let Drexel," that's the university that he works at, "let Drexel know, in the midst of the deafening organized troll storm," in other words, people being critical of his tweet, "that racist trolls deserve no platform in dictating academic discourse, let alone the off-duty tweets of academics." So the professor tweeted that he wants white genocide. Some people said, "Hey, that's really the wrong thing to say." And then people came out and said, "Hey, if you say anything against what he said, you're racist." Try to wrap your head around that one.
That is incomprehensible.
It is incomprehensible. And the fact that this change.org came out and said that, it was an off-duty tweet. And then, so, whatever. Well, there's been a lot of off-duty tweets that have gotten people in trouble. People have lost jobs over off-duty tweets. Mm-hmm. So, when they said that, I had a few thoughts come to mind. What was that guy from ESPN? Kurt Schilling?
Yes.
He had to come off-duty tweets that got him fired.
Right, and I guess the description after the fact was that he was comparing all Muslims to Nazis, when if you actually looked at his tweets, he's comparing the radical Islamic terrorists to Nazis. That is probably a pretty accurate comparison, and yet he was fired for it.
Yeah, he was fired for an off-duty tweet. It's his own business.
And then again, I guess the transgender bathroom one, that where he was mocking that entire idea.
Right. And then this guy comes out and tweets, "All I want for Christmas is white genocide," then backs it up by saying, "Oh yeah, it was a great time when they did get killed at some point in history." Mm-hmm. And then he gets supported by some people, and anyone that is critical of the tweet, they get called racist.
Change.org is, as far as I understand it, radical, radical left. So it's not too surprising that they would have a petition supporting him. It also reminds me of my favorite baseball team, the Seattle Mariners, basically they thought about ending a guy's career because he was one of the players on the team, and he criticized the rioters in Charlotte.
Right.
And said he called them animals for tearing apart the street. And then somehow, some way, people took it as him criticizing all black people,
right?
Which is impossible to make that connection. If you're only talking about rioters in the street, you're not talking about an entire race. That's just not possible at all.
Yeah, it is really amazing, some of the things that people tweet. And then they're allowed to continue to have employment.
Mm-hmm.
How can you tweet something like that? How can you be a white student in this guy's class and be okay with that? We shouldn't want the genocide of any race. That's ridiculous.
Well, it just seems like if you're tweeting that way and you have that kind of a radical leftist viewpoint where you hate white people, basically, or you hate Christians, anyone like that, then it's accepted. But if you tweet something, which actually a lot of people would agree with, even if they wouldn't say it, they would agree that a lot of terrorists could be compared to Nazis, or they could say that someone tearing apart a city is acting like an animal. Those things actually make a lot more sense than what that guy tweeted.
Yeah, really strange. We talked a little bit yesterday about the screen time that some people are getting involved in. Too much screen time, having some health problems. The Finns, they rank top in screen time. Smartphone-obsessed Finns, they say. In the first half of 2016, Finns used nearly twice as much mobile data on portable devices as South Koreans, who came second in a recent comparison of 32 European and Asian countries by Swedish telecommunications specialist Tefacent. So the U.S. was not included in this. I don't know where we would rank, but as far as Europe goes, they're the top, and they're the top by a lot.
Wow.
Using twice as much data as the second place people. They say Finns spend so much time on their phones that authorities are concerned The city of Helsinki's Department of Health and Social Services recently launched a campaign telling parents to get their priorities straight. Get them right. They're saying that they're neglecting their children, and that's a violent act.
Yeah, it is. It almost justifies the state taking away the children like we heard about yesterday. I mean, that's if you get let it get to an extreme, you can see why the government might try to justify such extreme actions, even if it would be wrong.
They say that for a nation of 5.5 million, there are 10.9 million mobile connection plans in Finland, nearly two per inhabitant.
Wow.
So, because they usually have a phone and a tablet, and they have the connection on each. And they say a key factor that allows Finns to devour data on the go is that they have fast connections and they're very affordable. The Netherlands, where operators charge the most for a gigabyte of mobile data, it costs 14 times more than in Finland. So Finland's cheap. It's the cheapest of all 32 countries that they compared. More than half of all phone and tablet connections in Finland come with an unlimited data plan for a fixed monthly price. So you don't have to worry. You just keep streaming, and they are.
Wow. That's just basically they're offering up addictions, those companies that are selling for so cheap.
Yeah, they had an example of a couple of people, one of them being a 13-year-old boy, and he's got a smartphone with a connection and uses it all the time. It's unlimited data, you know, and he says, yeah, you use it at school. A lot of their assignments are like app-based, you know, math or something where you'll play a game.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's a changing time in terms of the way people are consuming information. And it just what do you think would happen if the internet was gone all of a sudden? Like people, what would happen? It's like that commercial, that AT&T commercial where they lose their minds. I think it's AT&T.
Yeah, I think it takes about half an hour for them to go crazy and start drawing on the walls and everything else.
Yeah, what would people do? The 13-year-old that they talked to, they said he gets 100 or more messages a day on his different social media platforms from his schoolmates. And, you know, I was just thinking, well, how much do we actually talk to each other? Do we talk to each other 100 times a day? You know, I don't know. It'd be interesting to compare the two. How much do we speak to somebody versus the messages that we send and receive? It'd be an interesting comparison.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty shocking to find out that we probably talk way more online than we do in person. At least most people do, not everybody. But yeah, I think I've seen that same trend quite a lot. And it's like people are more comfortable typing something than they are just using their voice.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that sometimes. Where I could just go downstairs and talk to somebody. I'd rather just send them a message.
Well, that's just ruthless efficiency, isn't it?
I text my wife in the house sometimes. We'll be in different rooms.
I've done that. Yeah.
And I'll wake up, and if she's already up, I'll text her, and I'll just say coffee.
I do that, but just for fun. It's just kind of hilarious that you can be in the same house one room over and be doing that.
And a great thing when you have kids is to text each other things that you don't want the kids to hear.
Mm.
You know, you don't want to say it so they hear you. Like, we might have something we're thinking about doing, but we don't want to mention it to the kids yet because we may not. We don't want them to get their hopes up. So, you know, we'd be texting back and forth. Like, literally, she's on the couch, I'm on the chair, and the kids are in the middle, and we're just, like, talking about something on the... So, you know, maybe that's a practical use. I don't know. Back in the day, they'd just say, you know, go out and play. But now we're just texting each other. So, anyway, it's... an interesting situation there. At least it's my wife.
Right.
At least it's somebody that I know. Of course, this one happened. The return of the underhand free throw in the NBA. It made a return last night.
Really?
People don't want to shoot the underhand free throw because they're embarrassed about being made fun of. And some guys can't shoot overhand, and they should shoot underhand on free throws, but they're Shaq tried to do it once or twice, and they laughed at him. He didn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the backlash would be pretty... vicious from the other team. Every other team in the league would never let you forget that you tried to shoot underhand.
I think Rick Barry, he was the famous underhand guy. He made a very high percentage. Well, last night it returned. Houston Rockets rookie, boy, this is a tough name, Chinanu Anuka, Anuku. Ballpark. Somewhere.
I don't even know who that is. I couldn't give you a better idea.
He's a rookie. He was recently called up from the D-League team, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. That's a cool name for a team.
Yeah, I just saw them play the Thunder's D-League
team
last week.
Well, maybe you saw this guy.
Probably.
He's a big man. They say when Suns big man Alan Williams fouled him, he was attempting a Eurostep layup. I don't know why that matters. with 2:46 remaining in the contest, They say we were treated to a neat little throwback oddity, the return of the underhand free throw to the NBA game, and he made both of them.
That's how you make a name for yourself. Do something totally quirky like that.
Absolutely. And they asked him about it a while ago, and he said, I came to the notion that I don't care what anybody thinks. He said that in July after the Rockets had selected him with the 7th pick in the second round. He says, as long as I get the bucket, the point, I'm fine. It's up to other people to ask themselves why they don't shoot underhand. But for me, I needed to put pride to the side and make shots. I can't worry about why other people aren't doing it. It's just a different form. I want to make free throws. Overall, I want to show I can play for a long time in this league. If he's making them, I don't care what he does. Bounce it off his head if he wants to.
Well, that's the one way to get people to stop making fun of you. Just make them all.
Sure. And that's a big and lame part of the NBA game is the intentional foul. Foul the worst shooter on the floor because they're probably going to make one out of two if they're lucky, and then you get the ball back.
Yeah.
And it just slows the game down, and it's so boring. And I probably, like every other person that's ever watched the NBA, and you watch somebody shoot free throws and miss them consistently, you think to yourself, you don't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh boy, I got to get to the office to finish the reports. All you do is play basketball. You couldn't figure it out. Like, just somehow get it into the... And I think why it's hard for the really big guys is the ball is small for them. They have really huge hands, and it's like trying to shoot a Nerf ball for us. It's just kind of weird. And I think that's why it's hard for them. Maybe I think underhand would help a lot of guys.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. That probably is why they struggle so much, because you know they spend hours practicing it. Dwight Howard, he regularly makes about 85 out of 100 in practice and then shoots well under 50% in games usually. So It just kind of shows you maybe a lot of it is also mental, where they're a bit nervous. They never shoot from that far away in the flow of the game. So then all of a sudden they're shooting free throws from 15 feet away when their normal shot is from 2 feet away.
Yeah.
Quite a big change from what they're normally doing.
Yeah. I wonder, they should allow them to dunk them. You probably
just
could
take one jump.
If you could jump from behind the line, I mean, I think I think you could. I don't know why you couldn't. It would tire you out. You know, it'd be pretty fascinating to watch a guy try that. But so anyway, this guy's shooting underhand. So I hope to see him on, you know, play sometime on TV, or if he comes through here in Oklahoma City, and I'm sure the crowd is going to love it. He'll probably get a combination of like boos and cheers. But hey, if he makes them. Yeah, nobody's going to say anything.
He'll probably get a lot of laughs as well.
Yeah.
People, you can't be too hostile toward a guy who's shooting underhand free throws. It makes you smile.
Sure. You can't be mad at that guy. So we'll see if he sticks around in the league. They say he's a pretty athletic guy, big guy, so it looks like he might have a chance. Their starting center broke his fibula. Capella, I think.
Oh, yeah. Clint Capella.
And that's been three guys that have broken their fibulas in the last couple of days, two quarterbacks, and then this guy.
Wow.
What's with the fibulas?
Yeah, guys, got to hold those up. Got to support them somehow.
Drink some more milk or something?
Oh, yeah.
Now, in the NFL, I know, you know, they got hit and it twists your body and it, you know, does some stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. The fibula.
A couple quarterbacks broke their legs this week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Carr from Oakland.
Really?
Yeah.
And, well, that's going to ruin their season.
And Mariota from Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, I did see Mariota.
And both of them got hit and rolled up on, and it snapped the fibula. So they'll be out. But
Oakland, they had a good chance this year.
Yeah, they did. They had a really good shot, and then they had his leg get busted. So not a good look. And they with Carr's hit, the camera zoomed in. You could see his face, you know, and he's just like, he's dying. He's in agony. He said, and then when they came over, he told the trainers, like, it's broken. Like, he knew right away.
Man.
So. Anyway, the fibulas, for some reason, are causing problems. It's interesting how that happens sometimes in sports. Somebody gets injured, guy comes in, and all of a sudden he makes a name for himself. You know, that happened with the Cowboys quarterback, the rookie. And then, you know, even with this guy from Houston Rockets, maybe because a guy got hurt, maybe he'll have his chance. So sometimes it's a cutthroat business. You know, you get hurt, and you come back, and somebody took your spot. You know, they don't always give it back to you.
That's probably the sad part about sports, because if you think about it, these guys waiting in the wings, they might be actually hoping for an injury or some opening somehow. So obviously you don't want anyone to get hurt, but if it's your only way to make a living, you know, make a career for yourself, then sadly that's sometimes what you need.
It's very competitive. Yeah, it's very, very competitive. So anyway, if you're a fan of the underhand free throw, keep an eye out for this guy, Chinanu Anuaku. That's terrible. It's Chinanu. That's his first name. Last name is Onuaku. Anuaku?
Anuaku. Chinanu Anuaku.
That's probably what it is. Yeah. It'll be like, you know, Bob Johnson. Like, that's how it's pronounced. Like, what? Really? How did they get... There's some guys. Milwaukee Bucks have that guy.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
I can't ever... His nickname is the Greek Freak, which sounds like a really bad nickname, but that's what he likes to be called. I don't know. He's really tall. So that's what I go by, because I can't say the name. It's so weird. Can you imagine doing color commentary for that?
Oh, yeah.
You see that his jersey and the name, like, goes all the way around because it's so
long.
It
arches around his number.
his name is too long. Change it. You got to get a stage name. That's interesting.
George Michael.
George Michael. The Key of David program is coming up here on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Brent Noctegal, from Jerusalem today. And so make sure you listen for that program as well. Always good to hear what's going on in that region of the world. And a lot is happening over there. And so he's got some good information on the program today. And, of course, he also hosts Watch Jerusalem, which we have new episodes on Sundays and then it replays throughout the week. So you're getting a lot of good insight from Jerusalem. You've been to Jerusalem, yeah?
Just back in 2008, I believe.
Yep. I have not had the privilege of being there, but always a hot spot and a lot of attention focus there all the time from major powers. And, of course, it's been in the news with the UN resolution and so forth over the last few days. Here's a really interesting write-up. This is something that is kind of under the radar, I guess. Story that you have for us here, Grant. It says, buried inside the 2017 NDAA is a little-known disinformation provision, and Obama just signed it. So they like to sign a lot of kind of laws, I guess, and there's a lot of information in there, and sometimes things are buried, and you got to dig through the information. And, of course, it's holiday time. People aren't paying a lot of attention, and all of a sudden things are getting signed. Well, what's getting signed? Disinformation provision. What are the details about what this is?
Well, Mr. Obama on Friday signed this NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act. On the surface, it looks really good because it does give money to the Department of Defense and the Department of Energy for national security programs. And it has vital benefits for military personnel and their families. A lot of great a lot of great operations going on with this act. But as is often the case with politicians, what they like to do is hide certain provisions within their bills, basically to avoid public discussion or public criticism on the issues. I think a pretty obvious example is a lot of the provisions in the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Where the whole thing is probably a foot long if you just stack the pages on top of each other. And no one knows what was in that, and yet it really could have been anything. Before it was signed, no one had even read it. This is kind of a similar situation where he basically hid this Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act within what was otherwise a pretty good bill. And what this does is... It actually has two main goals. The first is a government strategy for countering foreign propaganda and disinformation from enemies. And it would just increase the authority and the resources of the Global Engagement Center. This is something that already exists. And it would actively go against propaganda from places like Russia and China and maybe even certain non-state hackers and things like that. And then the other part of it, it would leverage expertise from outside the government. So the first part is government counteracting propaganda. The second part is giving grants and funds to local journalists to learn what is basically fake news, which is what we've been hearing a lot about. So the government is going to decide what is true and what is false, and they're going to basically tell the journalists the same thing and how to report on it.
Yeah, that's a really kind of a scary thing. And of course, that's they've been pushing for this for a while, particularly the left, I guess. That's where I've heard it from the most. I've heard the president himself or read, you know, where he is. He has lamented that there isn't some sort of like gauge for what's true and what's not, some sort of a standard. And while that might sound good to some people, the problem is, of course, is you can't, you become like a North Korea. They decide what's true in North Korea. You don't decide. And one of the great things about the U.S. traditionally is freedom of the press, where you can go in and you can find the right story and find the truth about it. Doesn't always happen. There's a lot of propaganda. But still, you can look kind of at both sides. Usually, you can usually find both sides of an argument. But we know that just based upon, you know, some news stories and things that have come out and what's even been said in the left, they, as much as the media really has been in their pocket, they want to shut down the other voices that are against them. And they're talking about, you know, Russia and foreign media, and sure, they would have a part to play maybe in some things, but you know, where does WikiLeaks fall on that scale? Now, WikiLeaks just released their very own documents, right? I mean, they may not like it, but I think most people actually do kind of appreciate that at least somebody put the truth out there. Mm-hmm. But what would WikiLeaks be considered? Hacking? Foreign, in, you know, foreign manipulation? Because I think the point Donald Trump tried to make, and I thought it was a good point, he didn't care where the information came from. He didn't care if Russia hacked or whoever. It was just good that the truth got out there. And I would agree with that. Because it's not like they gave a fake or false news story. They just took the information that was already there, but they were trying to hide Hillary Clinton's campaign, and they put it out in the open. So if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to worry about. But now I think what they want to do is just shut that down, and I don't like that.
Yeah, there is definitely a complex balance here, because obviously for things like ISIS propaganda on social media, you want to have a way to eliminate that, or at least extremely limit the effect that that can have on a wide range of people. However, when it's not propaganda like that, you can't just single out different news sources and say, well, we don't agree with your viewpoint, so we're just going to silence you. We saw something like that recently when the Washington Post linked to this basically anonymous group that had assembled all of these supposedly fake news websites into a list. No one even knows who is behind that website that compiled a list of fake news sites, and yet here they are accusing dozens, hundreds of outlets of being Russian propaganda arms. Where is their credibility coming from? Who are these people who can just willy-nilly decide who is fake news? And why is the Washington Post quoting someone they don't even know? So really, that is something where basically big news outlets, mainstream news outlets that have especially lost a lot of credibility recently, are trying to do all they can to discredit anyone who disagrees with them.
Yeah, it wasn't long ago, with, I forget what the name of the law was or whatever they did. They were trying to make some sort of a, as they saw it, fairness. Like, so if you had a conservative talk radio show, then you'd have to have a liberal one as well. You know, you'd have to have one of each, which is, people do what they want. They don't have to do that. And they tried that for a while, and it just failed because nobody wanted to listen to the liberal talk shows.
Those hardly even exist.
Right.
Like talk radio, where you have to go on for 6 hours. What are liberals going to talk about when they don't have any good ideas?
Well, I think it was, what was it called? Like, they had it was a network. It was like Air America or something. I can't remember what it was called, but they tried it, and they wanted to get their viewpoint out there. But, and that's fair enough, I guess, that they can do that, but nobody was interested. So now, you know, as much as they beat the drum and they're upset about fake news, as they call it, people are still going and looking at Drudge Report.
Mm-hmm.
Fox News still wins the ratings battle. Why? Because they're, if nothing else, at least they're not completely full of anti-US, anti-white propaganda. And that's what you get from the other sources. That's what CNN is. That's all they are.
Yeah.
Every article you read is about how, you know, whites are terrible and America's terrible. And if you're living in America and if you're Caucasian, you don't like that. You'd rather hear something else. And, You know, it's very dangerous when you give a government body the authority to determine truth. That's very dangerous.
Yeah, that speaking of CNN, I remember a clip where they had an all-female panel, and every single one of them held up their hands, as in hands up, don't shoot. And they knew that was a fake narrative. They knew that was fake news, and yet they actively pushed it. And now they have the nerve to call everyone else fake news just because they don't agree. And just that thing with WikiLeaks as well, you know, politicians lie directly to people's faces all the time. And WikiLeaks has proven to expose people on both sides of the aisle. They're not just targeting Democrats. That has been what has come out recently because a criminal basically almost won the presidency. So she had to be exposed before that could happen. But really, they have attacked everybody. They have exposed everybody. Basically, they just published the truth. Who knows how they got it, but those are real documents. It's not fake news. And you can't just, because you disagree with it, brand it as fake news, and then that becomes true.
Well, fake news, I'm just appalled that they even talk about it. Well, who was it? Was it the New York Times or Washington Post? Somebody, they gave Hillary Clinton editorial control over the stories they printed about her.
Yeah, the Boston Globe did it too. There were several outlets where they went to her to get quotes approved or disapproved, and also certain facts in their articles she was able to have veto power over.
Yeah, and then to sit there and say it's fake news. The other side is fake news. They've been exposed. I mean, they even admitted it. Like, that was what was so strange about the election or the campaigns was that, you know, they were sitting there, some of these mainstream, whether it was a news or a news, like a television show or newspaper or whatever, and just admitting, yeah, we're completely behind Hillary. We don't even care. That's what we're going to do. And they admitted it. And so people don't like that, obviously. Yeah. They're supposed to be neutral. Now, I don't know that that ever happens, but they're at least supposed to try to pretend to be neutral. And they just come out and say, yeah, we're completely against one side. We want this other side to win. And then to have the American people saying, actually, we don't agree with you. What are they going to do? Legislate it away. Make a law
right
that makes somebody be quiet. That then you don't have a free country anymore.
Right. And some big news sources like New York Times came out after the election and they apologized for their biased reporting. But that, now they're continuing to do the exact same thing. They know that the American people don't like it, and yet they're still just going on with it. And now their strategy is to continue with their unpopular, lie-filled reporting, but just to eliminate the sources that are not on their side. That way, basically, the American people don't have any other place to turn to for their news.
Right. And that's I think, their last hope is to shut down opposing voices. I don't know how they're going to do it, though, now with a new administration coming in that's not behind them. And Donald Trump, President-elect Trump, he's his own media outlet. He just tweets everything, and that probably drives him crazy because they don't get the scoop, you know. But so it would be interesting to see how things change. You know, if they can sign a bill, maybe they sign a bill the other way. You know, I don't know how they'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is definitely a power struggle, and I think not only to control politics, but also some of these more traditional outlets are losing their money
mm-hmm.
because they're getting, you know, people are going to these other websites and places, and I think they're trying to get their money back too, probably.
Oh, yeah. And one thing you can say about this Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act, and really most of the things Mr. Obama has done, no matter how radical left they may be, he has been subtle and crafty in the things he's done this entire time. This is a pretty smart, although devious, way to get what he wants, because he doesn't have to abide by the will of the American people. He can just bury it within something else that the American people would actually agree with, increasing funds for the military and things like
yeah.
that. But he's pretty smart about the way he strategizes, and even the act itself, the Propaganda Act itself, is two-pronged. So even one of those prongs is pretty legitimate, where you say, you know, our national government needs to counteract the national governments of North Korea, Russia, China, Iran, you know, even the Islamic State. That's not a national government, but that's a pretty big power as well. Sure, we need to counteract those powers so that we don't start thinking in America that those nations are better than ours somehow, when that clearly isn't true. But whenever you have the other arm of it being the government funding news outlets so that they are now properly educated to
right.
disseminate truth, that really is where it's crossing the line. The government and the media need to be separate. Otherwise, we're just like all those failed Arab states or Far Eastern states that have state-run news agencies that have no credibility because everyone knows they're just putting out whatever the government wants.
Yeah, and it's so strange because they talk about fake news, but then at the same time, yeah, and one of the reasons being, like you said, you know, we don't want Russia influencing us. Oh, please. If a professor at a university can send out a tweet saying he wants white genocide, and really when they talk about white genocide, they mean American white. They don't mean the Russians. They mean American.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, that's not a communist I thought. You know, you mean to tell me that Russia's communist thoughts haven't invaded the universities for years? Of course they have. Look at the stuff they're talking about. Look at the revisionist history that they're pushing at the universities. All of this stuff. And then on the other side to sit there and say, oh, Russia's, you know, influencing the election. They've influenced generations of people going through some of the universities. And the professors are just proof of that. But we're all concerned about fake news to guard us from Russia. They should just call it the anti-Drudge / Fox. That's what they're going after.
That does seem to be the motive of the Propaganda Act, because, of course, we want to counteract other governments. It's, you know, blatant propaganda like ISIS on social media. Like I said, that is something that maybe we should just get rid of all of that off of all social media, you know. Freedom of speech or not, if that's encouraging people to kill Americans, that's something that doesn't necessarily need to be allowed. But really, that's the motive, is, well, we haven't really cared about communism infecting the minds of the American people for decades. But now, because supposedly we lost one election, and we're going to blame that and try to be more diligent now.
I mean, what they're really saying is anybody that disagrees with our thinking and what we want to do in our agenda is fake news. That's what they're saying. And they hide it. And you always have to wonder, too, if you want to bury this in something, why? Why do you want to bury it? If this is great, it should be brought up. And you should, you know, I guess politicians always like to brag about stuff and how good they are. They should tell them, like, well, I passed this great law. It's amazing. You'll love it. Well, now we got to bury it. Why? Because it's dishonest.
And that just reveals the elitist mindset as well, where we have this grand utopian vision. The average person, the working man, doesn't understand how great this is. So we need to pass it anyway, because it really is beneficial for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Just we'll tell you what to do and how to do it. And you just trust us. Trust us on this one. So it is a little bit of an in-depth sort of topic, because you've got to sort through all the all the ways they try to make it convoluted. There's a few write-ups on it that you can look at. One I saw was from Zero Hedge. Obama quietly signs the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act into law, and there's a few other write-ups on that as well. So it's probably worth your time if you've got some time to go read about that and try to make heads or tails of it a little bit. I think at the end of the day, it's trying to control the media, and that's a dangerous thing if you get into that. So,
yeah, there was a somewhat humorous quote in this bill. It said that they just seek to proactively advance fact-based narratives that support U.S. allies and interests. I just thought that the fact that they're putting the word narrative in there, when that has been pretty much universally used for lies.
Yeah.
Narrative now means a story that is false, a story that is fiction, like with Ben Rhodes and the Iran deal, where he just crafted this mock story.
Yeah.
And nothing based on the historical facts, but just whatever he feels like writing, a creative fiction.
Which is, what would that be? That would be fake.
Yeah.
That would be fake news.
They're advancing creative writing skills, basically, by crafting narratives that aren't true.
It's a really strange, up is down is up.
Yeah.
It's just, everything's getting really weird in that way. So those are some of the things that are going on. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well, and all the other programming here at 101.3 KPCG. That'll do it for us on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, we will see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.